If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hi, Bill Tabone here, co-founder of the Australian Paranormal Society and author of Ghosts of Airedale Asylum. And you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Enjoy.
Hello, welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have Nathaniel Elwell. Nathaniel is a paranormal investigator, a researcher, a historian, an author. We have much to talk about. And I'll be right back with my conversation with Nathaniel Elwell right after these messages.
Are you interested in all things paranormal? Ghosts, EVPs, cryptozoology, and the history behind the legends we all love, but you don't have an hour out of your day to listen to another podcast? Well, then you should listen to Ghostly Paranormal, where we talk about all of those subjects and condense it down into 15 minutes or less. Check out Ghostly Paranormal.
Okay, today I have Nathaniel Elwell joining me on the show. Nathaniel is a paranormal investigator and researcher with over 15 years of experience. Nathaniel is also an author and has been on numerous podcasts and has appeared at many Paracon conventions. Welcome to the show, Nate.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, can I call you Nate?
Or Nathaniel? That's completely fine.
Okay.
I'm good with Nate.
Alrighty. Let me start out by just asking what got you interested in the paranormal?
So, you know, I've always had a slight interest in it. Even when I was in middle school, I used to check out books from the library. One of the first books that I checked out was The 13 Alabama Ghost and Jeffrey by Katherine Tucker Windham. And I loved that whole series, and that kind of got me hooked. And, you know, I went from just looking into ghosts when I was younger to start looking into Area 51 as I lived in Nevada for a while. And so I just kind of started to branch off and look at all these different aspects. And what actually got me investigating the paranormal were my own personal experiences that I had where I don't want to say haunted, but I'm going to say I had an attachment. Mm-hmm. I guess that would be the same thing as haunted, but I consider them two different spectrums. Mm-hmm. It culminated one night with me having a bout of sleep paralysis where I woke up and there was a figure standing at the foot of the bed that drifted backwards into my hallway. And typically with electric malfunctions, you know, the lights, they either dim or they get bright, but I've never seen a light bulb explode like this one did. So I don't know exactly what happened there, but the very next day I started reading as much material as I could find. And then I started looking into it physically. I started going out, you know, doing cemeteries at first. And then once I got everything situated and I felt like I was comfortable, I started taking on residential cases. And that's pretty much what I stick to now, is I love residential cases.
I see you started out investigating with the Southeastern Ghost Research Association out of Alabama.
Yes.
So was that mainly residential or commercial?
That was mainly residential. During that time frame, we only took four commercial cases that I can recall. The four commercial cases we took were the Castillo de San Marcos in St. Augustine, Florida, the Ponce de Leon Fountain of Youth Park in St. Augustine. We did the oldest jail in St. Augustine, and we did the old Coffee County Jail in Elba, Alabama.
Have you checked out the lighthouse yet?
I did not have the opportunity to investigate it, but let me tell you, I am deathly afraid of heights. Mm-hmm. But I did go up to the top of the lighthouse. I had the opportunity and I walked around the outside, my knees trembling the whole time. But they were like, I don't know if it was a joke or what, but I know you can buy that certificate in the gift shop that says you climbed all the stairs and whatnot.
You're right.
And the guy at the top was like, man, you don't look comfortable up here. I'm like, I'm afraid of heights, dude. I don't know what I'm doing up here right now. And he's like, well, if you want that certificate from the gift shop, you got to walk around the 360 view. So I don't know if he was pulling my leg or what, but I was like, you know what? I've got to get it just to say that I've done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were there on vacation with the family, and my son at the time was like 10 years old, I think. I can't remember. But it was him and I first going in the up the stairs of the lighthouse. You know, the climb of that lighthouse. There was a clanging like up at the top that we heard, and like a man's voice. And we were the only ones in there. There was nobody else in there except for me, my son, and wife and daughter. Yeah, that was interesting. You know
what? It's a great place to vacation. Back when I lived in Alabama, I would go there once a year for a week. I love St. Augustine. It's a beautiful city, very rich history. I mean, there's so much to see and do.
So where in Alabama did you do most of your investigations? I mean, what area?
So my team was based out of a place called Daleville, which was about 2.5 minutes outside of the Fort Rucker Gate.
Okay, because most of my family live in Alabama. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, so I have Muscle Shoals. I don't know if you know what that's, northern part, by Huntsville.
I do know where Muscle Shoals is. As a matter of fact, I love Huntsville. I've been to Dead Children's Playground a few times.
Okay.
Huntsville's pretty awesome. I also have been to the Sloss Furnaces over there in Birmingham. That place is amazing.
Now that you're the Newport Paranormal Society in New Hampshire, right?
Yes, I am the founder of the Newport Paranormal Society here in New Hampshire, which is where I currently reside.
How many people are on your team?
My team is actually family-based.
Oh, right.
I don't typically take on people outside of the family because I feel like the family I can trust. They know my standards. They know what I'm looking for. And they know that when it comes to these cases, I take them seriously. There's been too many times I've ventured outside of the family and ended up either A, having equipment stolen, B, someone shows up drunk or high, and you can't have that. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there, you know, yeah, they have the general interest in the paranormal, right? And mm-hmm. it's a widely known thing now. But the thing is, they don't realize the amount of work it actually takes, not just the work, but the patience, because you can go into some of these locations and sit there for 12, 14 hours and not have a thing happen. And then, oh, well, I have to come back here tomorrow night. This was so boring. When you go back there the next night, it's just pop, 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 things happen. And, you know, it's very difficult to find people that are willing to abide by rules other than their own, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, like you said, you know, sometimes nothing happens. So you got like 12, maybe 14 hours just sitting there in the dark or even in daylight and nothing happens. I mean, because you know well as I do, more times than not, it's not paranormal. Or if it is, the spirit or entity picks and chooses who they want to connect with.
Exactly. And you're 100% right on that. And, you know, and like when I did have people outside of my family inquire about being on the team, some of them I overwhelmed. You know, I'm a stickler for things. I'm a kind of OCD about certain things. And one of the things that I would do is that they got a handbook, they got a field and evidence guide, and they got a debunking guide. And I told them, you know what? You have a month. You need to read these three books, read them thoroughly. In a month, I'm going to give you a test. You mm-hmm. don't pass that test with a 90 or above, I will not accept you on the team. You get two chances to take the test. So if you don't pass at either time, I can't accept you.
Yeah, you don't want to go in there as an amateur. And I mean, you're working with people that were once walking this earth, you know?
Right.
My body is my biggest tool for investigation.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't claim to be an empath. I don't claim to be an investigator. I'm not an expert. Like I know you said before, I heard you say you don't believe in experts. I don't either. You know, how can you be an expert into a field that's the unexplained? Paranormal is right. Unexplained.
Everything that we do is a form of pseudoscience. And until we can take a ghost and put it into a scientifically controlled environment and get repeated results from a hypothesis, realistically, we can't consider ourselves experts of anything.
Exactly. you know, because my first experience was when I was 12 years old and I've been writing a book on that. I didn't need any paranormal equipment. My thing was what we heard, what we seen, what we felt, you know, and it was just my sister and a few other people. That whole 5 years that we lived in this house, my mother, my father experienced nothing, you know? So, and that's, you're always called lunatic or crazy or making things up. Or when I was 12, I had all these events happening, you know, and that's hard to explain until you're 16 years old. So you kept it quiet especially when you're going to high school and people's, you know, here comes crazy Cooley again. You know,
you don't want to be looked at the weird guy. Now I get that 100%.
Yeah. I'm sure you're being called that or.
I still get called that.
What's your favorite piece of equipment, or do you have a favorite piece of equipment that you use?
So I'm kind of like you in a way. So I do an old school investigation. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'll involve some of the newer stuff that they have mm-hmm. out. But for me, like, your senses are number one. You can always trust your senses. If you're in a place and you start getting the goosebumps, you know, you get the electrostatic charge, you start getting those goosebumps, or you have just a feeling of general mm-hmm. dread. To be honest, your senses are and always should be your number one tool when doing the paranormal, and you need to listen to them. And I wish a lot of people would take more heed to what your body's telling you, because your body can sense these things, whether or not you realize it. You don't have to be an empath. You don't have to be a psychic. Anyone can have these feelings. It's like when you walk into a room after someone just had a heated argument, you don't have to see them arguing, but you can feel it. It's literally like, that's what the phrase, you know, you cut tension with a knife. Pay attention to what your body's telling you. But if I had to choose, I guess, a favorite piece of equipment, you know, that my voice recorder.
Yeah, back to, that's old school, you know.
I love my voice recorder.
Yeah, basically, that's what I used when I was going with my friends of mine. I had a voice recorder, and my camera was infrared. It's stuff like that, you know.
The physical stuff is always so strange, too, because, you know, it can have two different spectrums. Some people say that it feels physically hot to the touch. Some people say it feels physically cold to the touch. I mean, realistically for me, the few times I've had the physical activity, I got punched in the eye once in the cemetery. That was interesting. Mm. I had a black eye the next day.
Whoa.
So the people that were with me didn't believe me that I got punched until we got home. And they're like, dude, your eye looks a little swollen. I told you something hit me. There was a cemetery out in Alabama that was called Mount Zion Chapel.
I heard of that.
There was a rumor that there's a witch buried there. So I went out to investigate it. There is also a tree in the center of this cemetery. It's a humongous oak tree, which is called the hanging tree, where apparently back in the 20s through the 40s, there's been approximately 80 lynchings done at this tree.
Uh-huh.
So when we went out there and investigated it, and by the way, I'm glad that you've heard of it. Not most people have, but it is a place that if you do not know where it is, you will not find it because it's not listed on any map.
It's in the boondocks, man. Like, I know.
It is.
Yeah. It's a country rural setting. I think I've been there as a child when my dad was taking me to his family burial plot. So, you know, actually people got buried on their property up by, like you say, up around the big oak tree or.
Yep.
I remember uncles talking about Mount Zion.
Oh, and let me tell you, that place did not disappoint. I got bit on the leg. There was teeth indentions. I still have pictures of it on my computer. I got bit on the leg. EVP wise, that place was astounding. I don't think there's ever been a location that I've been to that I caught as many EVPs as I did at Zion Chapel. That was absolutely astounding. Now, one of the things that really confused me, though, was they have something there that used to be, I assume, an old well house, or it could have been a foundation for a basement of a church that at one point in time was there. Because I know there was a church at site and it was moved sometime in the 60s.
I was just going to say that. So, I thought there was a church nearby there.
There was, and it was moved sometime in the 60s to a plot that's like half a mile down the road.
I was there when the church was there because I remember the church. Okay. And because I went there, it had to be like 1960 or 1961.
Yeah. Yeah, if I go by the legend, it was moved in somewhere between 62 to 68.
Okay.
So I couldn't find an exact date. I don't know if it just either A, lost the records, or B, if the records weren't kept on it because they were just moving location. I realistically don't know. But what I can tell you is typically when you're below ground, the temperature is going to be cooler than what it's going to be as the ambient temperature on the surface. When I was down in this pit where they said that satanic rituals had taken place, I obviously could not confirm nor deny this. The temperature inside of that basement area, even though it was an open spot, it was 71 degrees on the surface. How was it 92 degrees in the basement? I've never been able to explain that.
If you ever get a chance, go to Erie Cemetery. It's in Erie, PA, on Erie Street. But the biggest activity is called the Vampire Crypt. You have to check that out. And you'll know as soon as you spot it. It's a huge cemetery, and it sits up on top of a hill, like it's embedded in an embankment. And I believe there's 5 bodies in this crypt. There's nothing on the crypt. So there's no names, there's nothing. It's like triple gated and padlocked. You can't get in. I mean, because of and you look that one up on Google. You have to Google that.
Triple gated and padlocked? Sounds like my kind of place.
You have to check that. If you ever get a chance, if you're in that area.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll be in that area anytime soon. I'm going to try and make it down to the Gettysburg Bash in July. I don't know. I don't know how close Erie would be to that.
You're kind of quite a ways. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because being coming from New Hampshire, I'm just going to take the north side of the Pennsylvania, try to avoid most of the highway.
Yeah, Gettysburg. Yeah, that's interesting. I've been there. Yeah.
I've not been yet. It's been on my bucket list for years. I've not been. I've been planning to go the last 4 or 5 years, and every time something happens, car trouble. It's like something is trying to keep me away. But this year, I have full plans on attending. I don't want to miss it, because for me, it's about the history. I love the history. It's not just the hauntings. Without the history, you can't have the hauntings.
Oh yeah, I took the tour of the Gettysburg. It was well worth the tour. You know, I learned more from this tour than I did from the history books from in school. And
interesting.
It was so touching. You know, it brings tears to your eyes that you think about all these states that went into battle with each other.
And the Civil War was such a weird thing. You know, it was family fighting family, and that's why they called it the Gentleman's War. You know, they would stop fighting during the day and get together for dinner at night. Mm-hmm. It was a very strange war.
It was strange, yeah. Getting back to the paranormal equipment, have you ever used dowsing rods?
As a matter of fact, I just somewhere over here. Sorry, I have a pile of equipment next to me. Somewhere over here, just recently purchased a set. I have never used them though. Yeah, they're somewhere over here. I got a big pile over here.
The reason why I ask is because I went to there was a show in our local library last year, and the person brought dowsing rods and gave us a chance to use them. I could not get these suckers to work. I remember back when my grandfather had his farm, and he was out back behind his barn, and he had the old stick kind, you know, that points down to where the water is, because he's going to dig a well.
Point down and vibrate a little bit.
Right. And it worked for him. He said, here, you try it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't get it. You know, the person doing the seminar says, well, everybody can do it. It just takes a little bit of practice. You know, I was just curious, you know, if you've had any better luck than I've had with them, you know.
So, yeah, I do have a set. No, I have not personally used them yet. But the set that I have, you know, it's metal and it's got the rod sticking down inside of a rotatable. I'm just going to be honest, but the way that you're supposed to hold them, and me being me and doing what I do on TikTok, you know, I'm a debunker. Mm-hmm. So when I sit there and I watch people use dowsing rods and I see their thumbs up like this, feel like micro movements there.
Right. I'm the same way. Right. Yeah.
That definitely could be subject to manipulation if you do it correctly.
But, you know, for years, the electric companies and gas companies used these things to find their power lines and water. My grandfather did it in his field and found the spot where he dug as well. And it works, you know.
And they do work. They absolutely do. But that would beg the question, though, for the use of the paranormal, right? I understand, you know, you're asking yes, it crosses. You ask no, it spreads apart, right? So if these things are acting in any way, shape, or form like we assume that they are acting, are we actually detecting a spiritual energy? Or are we detecting some kind of magnetic energy from a flow of a water source that's underneath us that just happens to be a current? At one point it's strong, at one point it's not. Is it a coincidence that they're, you know, seemingly coinciding with a yes or no answer? Yeah, mm-hmm. It very well could be just a coincidence. But without digging into the ground or doing some kind of GPR, you really don't know.
Because what I'm getting at is, do you believe ghosts, spirits, or even shadow people are the result of energy? Because everything is energy.
You know, if you go off the theory that energy cannot be created or destroyed, it can just be displaced. Realistically, do I think that spirits are energy? I think that it very well could be plausible that they're a collection of energy, or it's always theoretically plausible that if you go off of the time frame theory, that we're all existing in collinear dimensions. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the circumstances are just right, and what we're experiencing and seeing aren't ghosts at all. They're people living on our plane, just in another time frame of existence.
Interesting.
I mean, that's a little far-fetched. But
well, not really, because, you know, anything's possible. So I've had so many guests on here, and it seems like a lot of them just point to, you need some type of energy for that spirit connection. And like you were saying before, like how you go from like 90 degrees to 60 degrees, you're in a 60 degree room, and now you're walking to a 90 degree room. So how is that possible? I don't know. I was just curious, you know, because with the energy.
See, and that's kind of like what I do. That's kind of like what I do on my TikTok. You know, I don't discredit anyone's stuff. You know, I'm a natural, logical thinking person. I'm what I like to call an extreme skeptical believer. because I've experienced enough to know it exists, but I've also seen enough to know what could be possibly explained.
Before we take our break, I see that you are a Wiccan. Explain to my listeners. I mean, I know what it is. Explain to our listeners what a Wiccan is.
So I study the practice of Wicca, which is a form of religion. So I actually had a family member that was tried during the Salem witch trials. It has been passed down to my family for generations. I don't use it per se to cast spells. And a lot of people who get into it, they're like, oh, I'm going to curse somebody. I'm like, no, well, rule of return. You don't do that. Anything you do comes back to you in the energy of tenfold. So you don't do that. I use it specifically for meditation and self-centering. I don't actually sit there and try to cast spells. I'll pull out my candles, you know, I'll sit out my stones, I meditate, and it kind of helps me ground and center myself. And grounding and centering is very important when you do paranormal investigating, in my opinion, because it helps spiritually protect you from anything negative that might try to latch onto you due to any negativity you have outside of that investigation in your own personal life. It's basically doing a self-cleansing.
Spiritually, what's the difference, would you say, between Wiccan, pagan, and Christian?
So Wiccan and pagan, realistically, can kind of go hand in hand in a way. I mean, they're both polytheistic. They both have, you know, a greater deity and a greater evil. So they kind of go hand in hand. And if you go back to ancient Judaic religion, anything or most things through Christianity can be traced back to some form of actual Judaic root. For a good example, Easter celebrates the death of a god that was reborn 3 days later. You can find that same exact tradition in the Celtic religion, which happened almost 2,000 years before Christ ever existed. Am I saying that religion, you know, as far as Christianity is wrong? No. I mean, I believe that everybody has their own belief. And what you believe, if it works for you, you know, more power to you. I'm not one of those people that likes to get into religious debates, because let's be honest, it's a hot topic and it can make people get heated really quick, especially with me.
A lot of times religion does come into play in your paranormal.
It does. But you know, the power of faith, it does. It plays a huge part in the paranormal, especially if you're one of those people that go in and you really want to help a family that's going through some trouble. Like if you have someone who, say, studies the Catholic faith, they're not going to come in and do a sage smudging.
No.
And if they are coming in and doing a sage smudging, then they need to stop because they're going to make it worse. But if I go into a place like up here on my shelf, I have Florida water, I have holy water, I have sage. Like I'm well versed in a lot of different religions. And I actually for a long time was a Protestant. Mm-hmm. And then my grandmother got me into Wicca. And that's kind of like how I transformed into that. So I have a decent understanding of both sides of the fence. And I'm not going to go into a place unless I am specifically asked with anointed oils or holy water and do a house blessing. That is not, I am not sanctioned to do that. But can I go into a place and do a smudging? Yes. But however, I always have to inform the clients, a smudging is not a permanent fix. A smudging is typically a temporary fix. It's going to give you relief for a good 6 to 8 months. A smudging will not remove spirits, and anyone who tells you otherwise either A, does not do them correctly, or B, doesn't do their proper research or has no idea what they're talking about.
Exactly. So when we come back after this break, we're going to get into some exorcisms and your thoughts on a couple of things there.
Ooh, I'm interested in that. I haven't talked about exorcisms on a podcast at all, so this is a new one for me. Sounds good, bud.
Are you looking for a new book to read? Check out my newest book, An Awakening, by Wendy M. Cope, last name spelled K-O-K. Basically, it's a story of good versus evil, and these things slowly start taking over the residents of this small northern town in Neillsville, Wisconsin, and I would love it if you would read it. My books are available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Book Baby Bookshop, everywhere, really, and you can find me at WendyMCopeAuthor.com.
Okay, I'm back with Nathaniel Elwell, and before the break, we were talking about, I had brought up demons. You know, you're talking about the Catholic Church and certain things they can do and they won't do or they can't do, because I was Protestant myself, and my wife's Catholic, so when we got married, I had to convert to Catholic to get married in a Catholic church. When you're talking about when you die, Protestant, you know, and Baptist and Methodist, they all believe when you die, you go straight to heaven or you go straight to hell. There's no in between. I mean, Catholic is, there's, you got that purgatory. So, I mean, right. How long is purgatory? So nobody really knows. Now, is that purgatory when the spirits are here? Do the spirits come back even after you're dead and you've moved on? You know, I don't know. I mean, And that's something I don't think anybody really can give you a straight answer. And there's people that's been on my show that has died and went to heaven and come back and what they've experienced, you know.
Right.
You're entitled to your opinion. I'm not here to say it didn't happen. I'm not here to say you weren't abducted or you didn't see anything.
I can promise you I have never been abducted.
But, you know, getting back to exorcisms, I had Bishop James Long on my show a while back, and he was very interesting, and I almost agreed with him almost everything he said. But man, you wouldn't believe the backlash I got off of that show, on because he left the Roman Catholic Church, and went to the old Catholic Church, you know, which was the original Catholic Church to begin with, you know.
Yep. Yeah, it's very strange, you know, and I've never personally met Bishop Long. I do follow him on TikTok. I've followed his work for years. I think he's an astounding human being. I think he's a great person. Do I think that maybe since, you know, he did a few TV shows, I know he was on Ghost Adventures, I do believe. And I think he was on another show. Do I believe that maybe he kind of overuses the demon term? Yes. But I'm not here, you know, just like you, I'm not here to call anybody out. But I personally have been investigating the paranormal for 16 years. I have never encountered a demon. I have encountered some pretty nasty human entities that can kind of resemble a demon. They kind of have the same characteristics. You got to figure, if we go off of the idea, like we were speaking about earlier, if spirits are some form of energy format that's left behind by a person, right? If a person is a nasty person in life, there's a good chance they're going to leave behind a nasty energy. And so do I think that Bishop Long does great work? Absolutely. I have nothing but high things to say about that.
Yeah, getting back to you're talking about these TV shows, you know, like Ghost Hunters or a few others that, you know, and it's theatric, you know, they have to sell their show.
Right.
And I think a lot of it's so much bullshit. You and I both know that, like you said, like demons. I mean, how many times have you come across a demon in your 15, 16 years you've been investigating?
Never.
And a lot of people just want to jump to that conclusion that was a demon.
Right.
And believe me, you'll know when it's a demon. Demons are... They don't attack you when you go in there and you're expecting to be attacked.
Demons don't know space. They don't know time. They're forever being. So they can be patient.
Mm-hmm, right. And I may agree with you that the demon term may be used more than it should be. Again, I blame these TV shows. And because if you don't put anything that's going to capture that person watching that show, they're not going to watch it. So they're going to throw all kind of stuff that they keep you to come back, even if it's a lie or fabricated.
Agreed. And I personally know several people who have been on paranormal TV shows that left the TV show specifically because of that. Good example, I was interviewed for Ghost Hunters Academy way back in the day, the first season that Adam Berry actually aired on. I was accepted to be on that show. I had to turn it down, unfortunately, because my ex-wife at the time was pregnant and I felt like she needed me more at home than I needed to be on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that opportunity and I turned it down. So I'm not going to name the name of this show per se, because like I said, I'm not here to call anybody out. But I can tell you that 3 years ago, I was interviewed for another ghost hunting show. And the exact words that I was asked during the interview was, would I be willing to accentuate my experiences for television? And the answer there was a blunt no. And they were like, well, this is kind of what we're looking for. And I'm like, well, then I'm probably not the guy for you, because I'm going to go in and I'm going to tell the truth. I'm not going to go in there and be like, oh my God, did you hear that? It was probably a mouse scratching on a pipe. Yeah, that's not me. That's not what I'm going to do.
I was going back on some of your podcasts you've been on, different shows, and I seen that about a voodoo doll you made.
So, oh man, the voodoo doll. So that is what I believe was what made me have my attachment in the first place, which we had talked about earlier on in the show. So I had a friend of mine who had wronged me in a way that a friend shouldn't wrong another friend. Me being only 2 years, maybe three, I decided to kind of branch off and start looking into the darker side, all, you know, more Vodun or voodoo, more commonly known. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they teach you, you know, are how to make a voodoo doll. And this guy stayed the night at my house quite often. Like, we were that close. And I had several articles of clothing, so I wasn't worried about having personal articles. So I made this doll with ill intent. And it was almost like within a week of me making this doll that the stuff in my house started happening to me. The scratching on my bedpost, the pulling on my blanket, my closet door coming open, the knocking on my window at 3 a.m. And I had multiple witnesses that can verify that all of this stuff did happen. And the odd thing is the doll disappeared. It was on my shelf where my DVD collection was. And mm-hmm. I can tell you that back then I was a straight edge guy. I didn't drink. I still don't do drugs, but I didn't drink. You know, I didn't even smoke cigarettes. And so I know I didn't misplace it. I don't recall ever moving it from where I sat it, because after I made it and I sat down and I thought about the laws of my religion, I know that the energy on my doll, if I decide to use it, it's going to come back on me tenfold. So I'm like, you know, maybe I was just being hasty. I was angry, and let's face it, it's never a good idea to make decisions in anger. Just all this whirlwind of stuff started happening, and the doll disappeared off my shelf. I never found it. I still don't know where it is. So it's a really strange ordeal.
You had a past guest on. She was a witch, and she was talking about, you know, you're talking about curses. You know, you don't want to put a curse on somebody because even though you can do it, it's going to come back. It comes back around on you.
Yep.
So you reap what you sow. So if you want to cause evil or harm, it's going to come back on you.
And I kind of feel like that's exactly what it was, because I had these ill intentions when I assembled the doll.
Yeah, when you made that doll, you had to have something. You made it for somebody.
Right.
So you're wanting to cause some type of harm or giving whatever on this person, and it's going to come back on you.
Yeah, and it did. And, you know, the whole strangest thing about that situation, you know, whether or not, you know, anyone believes me, they don't have to. I mean, it's my story. I can tell you what happened to me. And people, sometimes I'll tell them that story and they look at me and they go, man, you're nuts. That never happened. Mm-hmm. Or you weren't there.
Right.
I promise you it did happen. But the oddest thing to me about this whole situation was the fact of how the doll disappeared and we never found it. And that was the thing to me, was no one else went in my room at that point in time. So I knew I was the only person going in there unless I invited a friend over to crash with me and play some video games or whatever. But they wouldn't have moved it. They wouldn't have touched it. It creeped them all out, to be honest. So I know they didn't go near it.
You were talking about when you got that black eye, your head.
Yep.
So do you believe that a shadow figure can hurt you?
You know, I'm kind of on the fence about that. And we've all heard these experiences. If you're in the paranormal for any point in time, you hear the occurrences of the most famous shadow figure known as the Hat Man.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that they can hurt you? I mean, I guess if you think about it logically, it's physically possible, because if you can physically see them, I would assume they have mass. And if they have mass, I would feel like it would be theoretically plausible that they could attack you in some way. I have only seen a shadow person a few times. I've never actually been able to capture one on camera or any form of film. So I'll be honest with you, I do not have too much experience in the realm of shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess theoretically, if they have enough mass that we can physically see them when it's darker than dark, then I would assume that they have enough mass that they could physically hurt you.
Yeah, I was always curious about that. I felt like I had like a guardian angel, because so much stuff has happened to me. Writing this book, it took me about 50 some years to write the book. I'm looking back on all these events and I'm thinking, man, I was truly blessed or spirit guide or something with me, because it's just too much. I mean, I've always said, this is really unbelievable. I said, it is. That's why I waited so long to write the book, because it is unbelievable, you know. And then I had another guest on the show and she's telling me her experience. Now it's like, when my book comes out, I didn't steal your stuff, man. It's because what happened to you is exactly what happened to me.
But you have that a lot, though, with the paranormal. Like, you have that. A lot of people have very, very similar experiences. And it is kind of eerie, because you can see a trend when you go down through and you hear other people's experiences. You're like, well, man, that was really similar to what happened to me. And, you know, it's weird how that works.
When you went on the investigations, did you go in, you know, knowing the history or wanting to know the history, or did you go in clear-minded?
So I am one of those people that I am infatuated with history. I love the history of a location. So I will always research the history before I go in. But I never assume that anything that I find in the history is what I'm encountering within the space. I take what everyone says as far as experience-wise at face value. If they've given it, quote-unquote, a name, I disregard that name. Because I'm not going to walk into a place and say, hey, James, for example, are you here? Not knowing that I'm not talking to a James. I'm going to ask the spirit to identify themselves through EVP recording, or, you know, if you have an SB7 spirit box, or some some form of communication ITC device. I'm not going to go in assuming anything. And like a good example, it's funny you asked me that because I had to sit because I used it for my last podcast. When it comes to history, Medfield State Hospital in Medfield, Massachusetts, that's my research.
Okay. Yeah.
In almost every place that I go to, I have a research folder like this. So I dig and I dig and I find anything that I can possibly find.
Yeah. See, I'm the same way. I really love the history of the, because of basically the building is, what's the history of that building? It's like that house went to last year, 1878 or whatever the time it was built. I'm so fascinated with that. And plus he's fortunate to have the archives of some of the pictures of this house, you know, back at that time. It's just astounding to me, but I've had another guest on it that said she likes to go in with a clear mind, a clear slate, because, you know, you've heard like the Lizzie Borden house. You hear so much about the same stuff. Every podcast, every show is just the same thing. But she said, I should clarify that I'm a psychic medium. So naturally, I want to be open-minded when I walk in, clear.
That makes sense.
So what I gather, I might be different than, say, somebody who's not a psychic. So,
right.
And I kind of, I really dug that answer because I'm just always to, you have to know about that person. You have to know about that building. And maybe sometimes you don't.
I agree with that 100%. Sometimes, you know what? Knowing the history beforehand is detrimental because you get yourself into a predetermined mindset as to what you could be dealing with.
Well, what I love about this show is I learn. I'm sure you do too. You learn off of every investigation. You learn off of each place you go into.
Absolutely.
Like you say, you're not an expert. You might get something totally different than what I get, you know?
Yeah. I have seen times where I've been standing side by side with another investigator and we're both holding a voice recorder. And one of us will catch a voice on the voice recorder and it's not on the other one, but we're using the same identical type of recorder. So in theory, at the same timestamp, we should both have said voice, but said voice only appears on one recording. I don't understand how that happened. But, you know, I could go into a location one night and it could be like balls to the walls. You could go in the next night and it's dead.
Right.
Nothing happens. And that's what makes it so fascinating is you never really know what's going to happen. And speaking of Lizzie Borden, you know, I feel like to me, that place is overhyped. I have been there. I have stayed the night at the Lizzie Borden house. I actually slept on the floor where they found the body of Mrs. Borden, like in the identical spot. I experienced nothing the whole night I was there. Nothing. It was a huge letdown for me. I'm hoping that September has better results because in September, I'm going to the famous Wilson Castle in Vermont.
Okay.
The very next day, I have to drive all the way across the state to Quincy, Massachusetts, because I'm going to do my first battleship.
Oh, sweet.
So that's going to be fun. I've never been on one. I've been on the USS Constitution, but I have, you know, that was a wooden battleship. It's completely different. So my curiosity here, and this is my mindset going into this, is I've been on the USS Constitution. So I know what it sounds like if I'm walking through the interior of a wooden battleship. Considering these newer battleships, which technically this is actually a carrier, it's not a battleship,
mm-hmm.
but considering that they're made of steel, what is going to be the extreme differential in the acoustics?
Should be 100%.
I'm really curious as to test that because I did some recordings that I ran through an algorithm to tell me, you know, what the decibel range on voices that I heard in the background were. Which the voices in the background in the Constitution, I could trace them back. They weren't EVP. They were natural voices. So, but I'm just really curious to see what the decibel range is.
Yeah, it has to be huge.
I would assume.
Yeah, I've never been on a wooden battleship. That would be interesting.
If you ever get out to Quincy, Mass, take the opportunity to go on the USS Salem. It's definitely worth it. Or so you got the Salem and Quincy, Mass, which is the metal battleship, which I will be investigating. Okay. And then you have the Constitution, which is like a half a mile down the road.
Your interest in the paranormal is mainly ghosts and spirits, correct?
Actually, negative. I go into all realms.
UFOs, cryptids, and
yep.
All that?
I actually used to research for a team called Chasing Legends, which deals in cryptozoology.
Oh, cool, because I was looking at a few of your YouTube podcasts, and they were basically cryptids and ghosts. On the last one I listened to, you touched a little bit on Bigfoot, connecting Bigfoot with extraterrestrial, which is interesting. Like the 411 cases.
Oh, man. That's a rabbit hole all on its own.
Right. So, you know, it's, okay, you're more than just the ghosts and spirits, you know.
Yeah, so I have a very, I'm not going to call it controversial, but I have a very firm belief in this, okay? I call myself a paranormal researcher. I don't call myself a ghost hunter. I don't call myself a cryptozoologist. I don't call myself a ufologist. I don't specify in one specific sect of the paranormal. I study all aspects of it. That's what makes me a paranormal researcher. If you're just out there hunting ghosts, you're not a paranormal researcher. You're a ghost hunter. Mm-hmm. If you're out there just looking for cryptids, you're a cryptozoologist. You're not a paranormal researcher. You have to be able to take in all aspects of what could be considered paranormal. That's ghosts, that's cryptids, that's UFOs. I mean, that could even fall into the realm of spontaneous human combustion. So, I mean, you have to be able to look at all aspects of things that cannot be explained by natural means. It's not just looking at one specific sect of the whole overall picture.
Like I said, learning on the show, I find all stuff that I didn't know before, you know, like black-eyed kids.
Oh,
fae people.
No, fairy people.
Right. You know, I've had fae witches on here, you know, the cryptids in our area down south of Ohio River.
You guys have the Ohio Grassman.
Mothman.
Yep.
I was going to go to my first Mothman convention last year, and then my dad got ill, so I canceled that. So my plan on going this year, so that's going to be cool. I went to the Kecksburg UFO convention last year in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. That was very interesting. Because I got to talk to people that were actually little kids when the Men in Black came in their homes in 1965.
That's pretty awesome.
When the UFO crashed in the Kecksburg and their side of the story, you know. And actually, you know, you get your best interviews, or they don't want to come on the show. They'll tell me their story.
They don't want the publicity. They don't want to be ridiculed.
They don't want to be ridiculed. You know, they may still have a job or their family works for, you know, whatever. I understand that. You know, and some of the comments I get, responses I get on my UFO shows from people who work in the Pentagon. And, you know, it's kind of weird when your phone rings and you know how you get the United States number. Well, I hung up, you know, these spam calls, you know.
Spam call. Yep.
I blocked that number. It comes up again. Like, how did it come up? But I blocked it. So I said, hello. He said, don't hang up on me. I work for the Pentagon. Listen to your podcast. Not going to tell me his name. Yeah. So a lot of them, my best material, I can't put on the show.
Right.
People don't want to have their name out there or be on camera, or they don't trust I'm not going to use a video.
Right. See, and I love that. I love, like I said, you know, all aspects of the paranormal. It all fascinates. UFOs. I believe once when I was about 7, I saw a UFO. It wasn't anything clear. It was up in the sky. But what I can tell you is back then in like 1993-ish, planes didn't move in a sideways direction at a 90-degree angle and then just zoom. I could tell you I've seen that. In Alabama, twice I saw a Bigfoot. Once was with my ex-wife, and I didn't say anything. She actually pulled over a mile after this bridge and asked me if I saw the Bigfoot standing next to the road. So it was kind of cool to have a witness with that one.
So she seen that too.
Saw it too. And I was like, well, yeah, I saw it. She's like, well, do you want to turn around and go look for it? I'm like, what the hell are we going to do with it? No, I don't want to go look for it. Probably going to eat it.
What about this book you're working on? I heard on a few shows that you're working on a book. I'm not sure if the book's out or if you're still working on it or you're looking for a publisher.
So the book is actually completed. The book has been complete for about a year. I went back through and did final edit about 7 or 8 months ago. So I'm having issues finding a publisher because of the fact of the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to the paranormal, a lot of people don't buy into smartphone applications being used for paranormal investigation, mm-hmm. which I understand. Don't get me wrong. I get it. So the book is actually going to be titled Downloading for the Dead, Investigating Paranormal Applications. So on my YouTube channel, as you've probably watched some of my videos, I go through and I download paranormal applications to my smart device and I test them out. Mm-hmm. And so the whole book is based off of my experiences testing these apps and my opinions as to whether or not they could work. And, you know, and I don't understand the flack, because if I can take this device right here, which supposedly detects movement based off a sensor, right? We have a touch screen in our phone. So why couldn't an application based off of a touch screen give us the same results this could off of movement? I mean, our phones have so many different sensors within them that people don't realize it. They have a barometer. How else do you think it tracks how many flights of stairs you walk a day?
Right.
It's got a magnetometer. If it didn't have a magnetometer, how else would it track the direction on your compass? There's so many different sensors within a phone and within a smart device per se that can be affected by spiritual energy. So to me, it is fully plausible that if you download the correct application, it could be used for paranormal investigating purposes. And that's the whole point of the book, is for me to point people in the direction of the app that they should possibly at least give a try. mm-hmm. and the apps that they want to avoid. I did the legwork for them. All they have to do is read the book.
Have you thought about going to self-publishing?
So I have, and to be honest with you, like financially, it's just not for me.
But I was thinking the same thing with my book, because I reached out to a few traditional publishers and got rejection letters.
So difficult without an agent.
Right. And even if I had an agent, even with mine being, and probably the same as yours, with mine being based on a true story, not everything in it is true. I say 90% of the, because I've already had a couple things changed by beta readers. But 90% is true. So then the ones I will not change, you know, because it's to me, it means a lot. If you go with a traditional publisher, they're going to change it. And they after they buy you, after they pay, give you your contract, it's out of your hands now. So now right. they're going to make it to where you may say, well, I want this. Well, it's too bad. I mean,
you've already sold it to us.
Control your story, control your cover of all that.
Like I said, you know, I have looked into the self-publishing route. I know that Barnes & Noble has a decent self-publishing program. I've been told that it's going to be cheaper if I split my book up into two volumes.
Yeah, it is expensive. Well, Nate, it's just been my pleasure having you on the show. And
I greatly enjoyed it.
When that book comes out, I want to get a copy. I want to have you back on the show to talk about the book, and we'll do some updates. I think you've got a Paracon coming up I've seen somewhere September.
September. Yep. So September, I'll be September 20th. I'll be at the Wilson Castle. We're doing dinner, a movie, and an overnight investigation. So if you decide to get tickets for that, bring a sleeping bag. And then the very next day, I will be driving down the Quincy, Mass to do the USS Salem, which is a limited event. I am actually going to be co-heading my own team of people who are going to be going into the ship to debunk the claims of the ship.
All righty. I'm going to keep tracks on you, and maybe hopefully, fingers crossed, I make the Paracon.
I hope so. When you make your trip up to Massachusetts, I can tell you it's definitely worth the drive up to go and walk the grounds of the Medfield State Hospital. You would absolutely love it. That's, like I said, you know, I go there probably four times a year just to walk the grounds. I mean, the place is steeped in history, and that's actually a place I could probably meet up with you and give you a tour.
All righty. Thank you for being on the show, and I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure, man. I would be more than happy to come back on anytime you want to have me.
Thank you, Nathaniel Elwell. And please come back in 2 weeks when I do an episode on the Crybaby Bridge right here in my town of Newton Falls, Ohio. I've been planning on doing this story for quite a while, but the bridge has been shut down. It's reopened. It's the second oldest bridge in Ohio, the oldest active bridge in Ohio. And I'm going to do a few on-spot recordings this year when I actually step outside the studio and try something new. I'm your host, Al Cooley, Ghost in the Valley Podcast.